Before we get to the combination problem, I wanted to answer another potential objection to panpsychism that hadn't occurred to me before I did a little more research into the more wooey proponent of the idea, who I believe rational panpsychists need to repudiate if we want to be heard. The objection could be formulated by a skeptic as the following. Wouldn't panpsychism raise our credence in parapsychology, for example telekinesis or telepathy? It seems that some proponents of panpsychism think that it would. I take it that parapsychological phenomena are not well supported, which renders any theory that predicts parapsychology to be less plausible. So if mind-to-mind communication makes sense on your model, that's a problem for your model. But I don't think something like telepathy makes any more sense on panpsychism than it does materialism. First, are we sure that parapsychological research is as dubious as skeptics argue it to be? On the surface, the research on parapsychology can look promising. However, you'll find that every case in which experiments showed an effect greater than chance, the experiments were being run by true believers, like Rupert Sheldrake. Numerous times, skeptics have attempted to replicate the results, to no avail. You can read more about specific cases, linked in the show notes, from Stephen Novella, Michael Shermer, and Susan Blackmore, a former parapsychological researcher who turned against the field after spending years rigorously testing the claims of parapsychology. She was open-minded towards things like ESP, morphic resonance, and telekinesis, and she updated her beliefs based on the evidence, namely the complete failure to replicate any results that supported parapsychological phenomena. It hadn't occurred to me to address parapsychology until this point, because I didn't and still don't see how its likelihood is increased on panpsychism. Materialism and panpsychism both assert that there are atoms and nothing else in your brain. So take mind-to-mind communication, or telepathy. It's hard for me to imagine how information, thoughts, etc. could get from my brain to your brain without a well-established physical medium. There are, of course, well-established physical ways of getting information or thoughts from my brain to yours, and we're able to follow the physical pathways by which I get a thought from my mind to your mind. We have a physically causally closed story about how we communicate between one another, having to do with vibrations through the air, light rays, and so forth. Telepathy essentially involves the bypassing of all well-established physical media and transferring thoughts from one mind to another by some other medium, not currently well-recognized. The reason panpsychism doesn't add any credence to parapsychology in this case is because it doesn't add any additional path between minds. Telepathy or telekinesis requires some other pathway between minds and other physical objects in addition to the ones that are conventionally recognized by materialists and physicalists, and panpsychism contributes no such additional pathway. In short, this is because panpsychism is a branch of physicalism. The combination problem is widely understood to be the best objection to panpsychism. I'm reading from Keith Frankish, materialist and opponent of panpsychism. Quote, "There are problems for panpsychism, of course, perhaps the most important being the combination problem. Panpsychists hold that consciousness emerges from the combination of billions of subatomic consciousnesses, just as the brain emerges from the organization of billions of subatomic particles. But how do these tiny consciousnesses combine? We understand how particles combine to make atoms, molecules, and larger structures, but what parallel story can we tell on the phenomenal side? How do the micro experiences of billions of subatomic particles in my brain combine to form the twinge of pain I'm feeling in my knee?" End quote. Panpsychists will admit that this is the most formidable objection on offer, but usually follow up by claiming that it seems like a tractable problem, certainly more tractable than the hard problem for materialism, or the interaction problem for dualism, the explanatory gap, and the problem of causal closure. Fundamental physics may be helpful here. The combination problem is usually presented with an implicit assumption about the nature of matter, that it's fundamentally particulate. It implicitly adopts the Greek reasoning that eventually you won't be able to split a particle any further. That's the atom, in the Greek sense, and that's as far down as reality goes. But modern physics doesn't paint us a picture of grainy particles. Rather, it's a picture of unfamiliar entities, like wave functions and fields. Prima facie, the combination problem seems more tractable when we're imagining the world as a wave function, or complex fluctuations in fields, rather than individual grainy bits. David Wallace commented in 2013, quote, "The popular impression of particle physics as about the behavior of lots of little point particles whizzing about bears about as much relation to real particle physics as the earth, air, fire, water theory of matter bears to the periodic table." End quote. In addition to our intuitive physics, our view of the self as a discrete object may also be making the combination problem seem harder than it is. The common vision of the physical world as lots of individual, discrete particles combining to create discrete, unchanging individuals makes the combination problem seem a lot more difficult than it may actually be. On a view of the self more along the lines that Derek Parfit or Galen Strawson imagine, and a view of particle physics that involve entities like fields and wave functions rather than discrete particles, the combination problem seems like a lot less of a problem. Though there is no consensus on the combination problem among panpsychists, presumably most would believe that just as material atoms have aggregated to form bodies and brains by massing themselves together, so the individual microsubjects have fused into larger subjects. The question posed by the combination problem is, why do they fuse together instead of remaining separate? And why do they fuse at that particular level of integration instead of an even higher level? The philosopher Hedda Hasselmerck has defended something called the fusion view. According to the fusion view, when micro-level subjects come together to form a human mind, they don't compose it as bricks compose a house, but rather fuse into it. They cease to exist as individuals and fuse into a larger whole, which did not exist prior to its emergence, just as we could combine several individual flames into one fire, or many drops of water, with their own borders, could fuse into one drop, with one border. The individual drops cease to exist, in a sense, and a larger, weakly emergent drop comes into existence with its own new border. There may be some empirical support for the fusion view in the integrated information theory of consciousness, which we'll come back to in a moment. I'm quoting the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. "The general consensus among panpsychists is that there is currently no wholly adequate solution to the combination problem. However, this is not obviously a reason to think the panpsychist research project is not worth pursuing. It was only many decades after Darwin and Wallace formulated the principle of natural selection that modern genetics developed. It takes time to move from a broad theoretical framework to a complete theory with all the details filled in. It's only recently that panpsychism is once again being taken seriously by contemporary philosophers and neuroscientists." End quote. One of those neuroscientists is Giulio Tononi, who has developed a model known as IIT, or Integrated Information Theory. IIT is a neuroscientific theory of consciousness which, according to Merck, quote, "has proved to have significant explanatory and predictive power," end quote. On IIT, consciousness is correlated with integrated information, referred to as phi. IIT holds that any non-zero value for phi means that a system is conscious. A higher value for phi corresponds to a higher degree of consciousness. And degrees, in the sense that I outlined in the brief "What Do You Mean by Consciousness?" episode. On IIT, integrated information correlates with consciousness. So what do we mean by integrated and information? The information in integrated information theory has a specific technical definition. It bears little relation to the everyday usage of the word information. In the context of